Hello there, and welcome to my podcast. I'm Connie. I'm a certified nutritionist, personal trainer, busy mom, and I live on a small hobby farm. I'm a former bodybuilder, and I currently have found a love for endurance sports. But I'm not your typical athlete. I believe there are many more contributors to athletic performance and overall health, and that we as a population might be doing it wrong. You won't see me pounding goos or chicken and rice, but you will see me in the pursuit to fuel not only athletic performance, but also balance it with optimal health. This is not just a podcast for athletes. Many people that fall into the health scene get there for a reason. I found myself in suboptimal states at multiple times in my life, and it has really sparked my passion for metabolic and systemic health. I am constantly a student of what I love, and now I hope to help others by bringing quality guests to the show to share their opinions and resources to hopefully help you formulate strategies to help you crack your health code. Welcome, welcome, friends, back to another episode. I am so excited to get you guys all on here today because I have someone on the podcast that I have been trying to get a hold of and get on this podcast for quite some time. She's an extremely busy lady. She's been writing books and doing all sorts of things and has had very limited time. So finally, I have her here and I'm so excited because she's going to talk all about polyunsaturated fats, why it's actually making us fat and how it's making us hungry and also messing with all of our metabolic functions. We also talk a lot about the medical industry and why they are kind of hindering people's success when it comes to health. So we kind of start out the conversation with a lot of that, and then we dive deep into polyunsaturated fats and why they are affecting our ability to lose weight and get healthy. So for today, I have Dr. Kate Shanahan on the podcast. Yes, so excited. She is a board-certified family medicine MD who has become a globally recognized metabolic health expert by changing the nutrition conversation. If you heard that vegetable oils are slow poison and that bone broth is part of a healthy diet, that's thanks to Dr. Kate's influential books, blogs, and work with the LA Lakers and other legendary sports franchises. Her 2020 book is called The Fat Burn Fix, and it is a New York Times bestseller, and her 2008 self-published classic, Deep Nutrition, was updated in 2017 with Macmillan and is available in a dozen languages. You guys, it's easy to find her, drkate.com. She also has a shopping list on there for polyunsaturated fat-free foods of all kinds. So I'm so excited to have her on here. We have a great conversation. Bear with us. The beginning, we kind of talk about the medical system and things like that, but I promise you will get value out of this conversation with Dr. Kate Shanahan. Dr. Kate, welcome to the show. I am so thrilled to have you on today. You have so much stuff going on. It's incredible, including your book, The Fat Burn Fix. I have been following you for quite some time, and I am so excited to have you here to talk about polyunsaturated fats and fat in general, because it's something that has gotten a really bad rap over the years, and people are literally scared of it. And then when they do eat it, they're eating the wrong kinds more often than not. So I'm hoping we can kind of dive deeply into this subject today and get my listeners all informed on healthy fats and what they should avoid. And I think it's going to be an awesome talk.
Great. Well, thanks for having me on your show, Connie. I'm so excited about being here, and I just love what you're doing because, you know, one of the reasons that folks get into trouble is because we haven't been paying attention to fat, but also we just haven't been paying attention so much to food in general. So, you know, living on a farm and hopefully what you're doing is, you know, helping get people excited about just producing more of their own food, because the more you do that, the less you have to even think about polyunsaturated versus saturated and so on. That's really just a great way to go. So yeah, so fats, most folks are just afraid of fat in general because we've been ordered to be afraid of it by some kind of fake science that's been coming out of the American Heart Association for over 50 years now. And it's fake. Oh wow, we're having some drama back here with my
I
cat.
see
I don't know if
that.
that's being picked up.
That's okay, but that's funny.
Last about 30 seconds. If you have cats, they have a short attention span. They're not like that. They're not like the Scottish and the Irish have been at war for constantly. The American Heart Association started telling us that saturated fat was bad in the 50s, right after they got an infusion of $1.7 million from a company that sells Crisco made from seed oils. Now, how horrible that is, I hope to make clear by the time we're done talking, because what that did was it made us convince people that butter and eggs and bacon and stuff that comes straight from a farm, normal food, is causing heart attack was going to cause people's heart attacks. And over the last three generations, like 50, 70 years, gradually folks have changed the way that we eat so that we're getting less and less of that fat, less and less of the saturated fat. And just so much of these seed oils, it's insane. The average person, if I've done my calculations right, and it's not just me, I'm basing them off a lot of other people's work, a quarter cup a day, a quarter pound, 4 ounces a day of seed oils. That's insane. Most people don't even know what they are. So that's 800 calories. Now, that's the average person. That means some people might be getting more. People who watch their diets at least a little bit are probably getting less. But the seed oils are like soy, corn, canola, cottonseed. There's also a term called vegetable oil. It's kind of like the blanket term when the manufacturer doesn't even list the specific oil he's using on the ingredients list. It's just because they're all basically the same, functionally, they serve the same function in the food manufacturing process. But these things are actually really unhealthy. I mean, the tricky part for some folks is that our bodies can't make a certain kind of fatty acid that's in these seed oils. And so that's why dietitians will tell you, oh no, they're healthy, because your body can make saturated fat, so you don't need to eat it. Your body can make cholesterol, so you don't need to eat it. But it can't make these polyunsaturated fats that are in seed oils. So that's all you should eat. And that's basically where we're at, because most people get 80% of their fat calories from these seed oils. And that leaves only 20% to come from actual food. These seed oils are so refined, they're really not food. They're factory products. They look like motor oil. They would be identical if you put them side to side, fresh motor oil. It's the same kind of sickly pale yellow. They're actually clear because they've been bleached, but they add a color back to it because it doesn't look good to call something food and oil when it's clear. So that's the story of how much we're eating, and the story of why we're eating it is because the American Heart Association gets money from people who want to sell those products. And what does that do to us? Well, I have on my website one of the pages that is kind of like ripped from my book. There's a graph that shows the lines of how much seed oil we've been consuming over the past 100 or so years, and the lines of type 2 diabetes, and they're just absolutely in parallel. And a lot of folks don't realize that, carbohydrate consumption, eating carbs, like eating starchy foods, eating sweets, that's not good for you. It's because you can eat a lot of empty calories and make you gain weight. But what actually seems to be causing diabetes is these seed oils. And that's what I talk about in the Fat Burn Fix, my latest book, which is the whole idea of you get diabetes if you gain weight. It's not that. It's you're gaining weight because you're in the process of getting diabetes. And that process makes you, gives you this like insatiable hunger. So even if you are only pre-diabetic, you are already, you're down pretty far down a road, a metabolic road, towards all the complications of diabetes. So I don't know if you have a lot of diabetics that, or there are people talking about diabetes on your show, but diabetic complications include heart attacks and strokes. Mm-hmm. So the American Heart Association is giving people advice to consume these kinds of fats that actually give them heart attacks and strokes. So it's great for business. And they by the way, they don't just get money from big food manufacturers. They get money from the pharmaceutical industry, from the hospital industry, from the health insurance industry. So in my view, they are like the Death Star of health, right? Like if this was Star Wars there was good guys and bad guys, the American Heart Association is basically that Death Star. That's where all the troopers of misinformation come from. And it's a huge, huge, massive force. And the folks like us who are trying to get the word out, the truth, we're those rebel forces that are, you know, the odds are stacked against us, but we're doing it anyway, because it's the right thing.
Right. And all of this kind of seemed to stem from like one person's opinion on something. That was Ansel Keys, correct?
Yeah, it was his Ansel Keys was on the cover of Time magazine in 1961 saying that his research showed heart attacks were caused by saturated fat. And at the time, other people were questioning, okay, well, what about cigarettes? Mm-hmm. Well, what about people who have high blood pressure? And he said that stuff was maybe it played a role, but the main thing was saturated fat. And he just started talking about it. He didn't have the data to support it, but
hilarious because he's the developer of K rations, and part of a K ration was cigarettes. And so we know how toxic cigarettes are to us now. He said they were okay. He demonized polyunsaturated fats he demonized saturated fat and didn't want us eating any kind of animal fats or butters or anything like that. Yet he thought cigarettes were okay. And now we know that cigarettes will straight up kill you. So why has this stuck through years of society? It's been the mainstream thing. And it like stuck so hard that everybody is in extreme fear of having fat in their diet when fat is extremely healthy to so many things.
Yeah, exactly. And it stuck so hard partly because Ansel Keys was hugely influential with the American Heart Association. And the American Heart Association, you know, if you're not a doctor, you don't really think about the American Heart Association and what they do. But if you are, especially if you're a cardiologist or, you're into stroke prevention, you are reading their journals. They put out like thousands of articles every single year in their dozens of journals that they produce. They're basically a powerhouse of nutritional disinformation that's just constantly, constantly repeating the message, saturated fat is bad because it raises your cholesterol and cholesterol clogs your arteries. They're just repeating it over and over, and it's totally a Mussolini thing. The more you just repeat the lie, the more it's just becomes a truth. And it's been working, but it was never true. And so like people tell me, you know, they express their frustration with this little, well, I hear this, you know, from these folks and this opposite thing from these other folks, and I can't tell what's true. You have to know who's talking to you. And you have to, I'm sorry.
Holy smokies, they are not happy.
Yeah, they're kind of new. We've had them for a month and they don't have enough to do.
They're kind of like us when we're talking about all of these things, you know. That's a diet war. Yeah, exactly. It's like a diet war.
Yeah, exactly. It's going on longer than usual. So the thing is that the myth won't, it's a myth that won't die because it's constantly being promoted, right? So it's the folks get kind of confused though, because they're hearing like these two sides with these opposite opinions on saturated fat and polyunsaturated fat, right? There's my side, which says there's no problem with saturated fat. Too much polyunsaturated fat can kill you. It's what's killing most Americans. And then there's the other side, which is most doctors and the folks who have all the access to all the mainstream media, right? They're the ones on National Public Radio. They're in the New York Times. I can't get in the New York Times. I was on Real Time with Bill Maher. And after that, Real Time with Bill Maher is really, really popular. Like I had like a million people on my website in the next couple of days. They shut my books down. So they stopped, they were not available on Amazon for 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're seeing that happening a lot right now, actually. There's a lot of big people that are in the health movement and trying to change the way our society thinks about health and change our medical system and do all these things. And these people are top researchers. They know what they are talking about and they're putting stuff out there and their full social medias are being deleted. Like Dr. Mercola, they are censoring him on so many platforms and stuff. You can't find him. And so there is something going on with all this stuff where they are censoring people that are trying to get good quality knowledge out there.
Yeah. So it's kind of really, who are the people that you're listening to, right? And so if you're being censored, chances are pretty good you're saying something that powerful people don't want you to say. And it's probably not out of the kindness of their heart that they're keeping it quiet. I mean, censorship is one of those things that should be a red flag about that person's values and their heart and, you know, what they're trying to accomplish. So, but that's why, like, what I'm saying is, like, you got to know who you're talking to. Who are you listening to? And when you're listening to Harvard, you're listening to a bunch of companies that started funding the American Heart Association a long time ago. And when you're listening to the American Heart Association, you're listening to people who are basically okay with cigarette smoking, even though Ansel Keys was the first person to collect data showing that cigarette smoking correlated with more heart attacks. Like countries where there was more cigarette smoking, they had higher rates of heart attacks. He was the first person to collect that data, and he started collecting in like in the late 40s. And he didn't publish it until 1980. But he had the data. And in fact, he probably never would have published it were it not for the fact that it was starting to look bad, that the American Heart Association was basically behind the eight ball when the American Cancer Society and the American Lung Associations were saying cigarette smoking is bad. So they just kind of like came late to the game just because it was going to look pretty bad if they were essentially keeping quiet, meaning promoting cigarettes, right? Mm-hmm. So, but those are the people, that's who Harvard says we should be listening to. So, right, when you look online and you Google stuff, you often go to Harvard, you go to Tufts, you go to these institutions that are supposedly, you know, the best of the best, but the truth is very different from that. The truth is that it's not like the smartest people, it's the savviest people who just want to have, you know, their name out there and want to be able to get on shows like Real Time with Bill Maher just at the snap of a finger. Because that's what happened to me, actually. I don't know if you watched the show, but 3 weeks after I was on, so for years, Bill Maher's been talking about nutrition. It's a passion of his. He's not had a doctor on to talk about it, though, until me. Like, he might have had a doctor on years and years ago, but then he had me on. And 3 weeks after me, he has another doctor on from Tufts. Right, that one of these like salt and pepper haired, really kind of good looking. If I weren't a doctor, I would play one on TV types, and he just kind of negated everything that I said. He did his best to kind of crush down the momentum of, yeah, you stay away from seed oils and you really improve your chance of surviving coronavirus, not to mention all these other diseases, and so this other guy comes on from Tufts and says, well, you know, a lot of people are not metabolically healthy. We just need to move more and be eating more fruits and vegetables. And then you go to his website and what kind of fats are they promoting? He says, we need to also be eating more vegetable oils. So it was like, I really, really would love to know like why they had him on 3 weeks later. What was the real story behind that? I mean, was it just basically to shut the conversation down and set the record straight, you know, mm-hmm. once and for all? Don't listen to this doctor from Cornell who's working, you know, for a small company. Listen to Tufts.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we can kind of segue here into that because the thing is all of these processed seed oils and stuff are causing a large amount of inflammation, and inflammation is what is causing many of us to be sick. So we can kind of go down that. Also just talking about, like you talk about, the four aspects of fat burning systems. And so how my listeners can start to improve the quality of the food that they are taking in and try to avoid, taking in these fats that are so unhealthy for them.
Right. So the number one thing to do is memorize the list of the most common seed oils and start looking for them so you can get a clue how are they getting into your body. So the list to memorize, there's three C's and three S's. So the C's are corn, canola, cottonseed, soy, sunflower, safflower, and then the term vegetable oil, which is like a blanket term for, we don't really know what's in there. We don't really care. And those, you'll find them in like mayonnaise. You'll find them in peanut butter. You'll find them in frozen meals. You'll find them in organic meals. You can find them in Trader Joe's and Whole Foods Market. And that's why it was censored, because I specifically said, because when Bill Maher said, you know, most people can't afford to shop, do all their shopping at Whole Foods. I said, well, don't think that you're safe there, because you look at all the ingredients, it's just like any other store. They're chips. Most of them have seed oils in them. They're salad dressings. Most of them have seed oils in them. So you have to read ingredients everywhere. And it's hard for a lot of folks over 50 because they're so tiny. You can't really see it, right? So you got to be like in there inspecting with them. What are you going to do, like an Inspector Clouseau with a magnifying glass routine? It's going to take you hours to shop. And yes, that's what people tell me, is that it took me hours to get through the grocery store. So what I did was I put together a list, a shopping list, basically, of the brands to look for and, you know, certain, especially in, so I'm based in Florida. So especially based in like the South here, with Publix and a couple other stores. So I have that on my website. It's a free resource that for available for folks.
Awesome.
Yeah. So it really helps a lot of people, but that's the thing, is the first step is just taking a look and seeing how these things are getting into your body. And the thing to remember about like why they're bad is exactly inflammation. It's inflammation in a bottle. It's like a pack a day of cigarette smoking for every maybe like ounce that you consume is equivalent to a pack a day of cigarette smokes. And the average person, remember, is having somewhere around 4 ounces. So that's four packs a day. This is destroying our health. It absolutely destroys our metabolism. It's completely, that amount of these things is completely incompatible with good health. And that's how we're in this situation where a fairly ordinary virus, a coronavirus, is now basically taking over the world, because we can't tell who's going to drop dead from it. I mean, we could tell if they were to ask folks who study metabolism, we'd be like, okay, well, it's the super obese, right? Super morbid obesity. That's a huge risk factor. People with fatty liver, people with low cholesterol are more likely to die than people with high cholesterol. And this all comes hugely, mostly from the seed oils. So there's other factors too. I mean, we overeat, but the seed oils make us overeat. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we crave sugars, and sugars are addicting, but the seed oils make all that craving and that addiction impossible to resist, because it messes up your metabolism, messes up the way your brain even sends signals for what to be hungry for. That it just totally changes the way the human body works. And it makes it basically impossible to really be a healthy human. Like, I don't know if this is part of why, what do you grow in your farm? What kind of vegetables?
So mostly it's for my own family. So I usually have an entire garden with everything under the sun in it. So like
tomato, take a tomato.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So your tomatoes versus like a tomato at like, what's a local grocery store chain near you?
Yolks.
I never heard of that one.
Yeah.
You look at those tomatoes in the grocery store and you pick them up, and if no one's looking, give it a little sniff and see if it smells like anything. Usually they don't even look like your tomatoes, I bet.
No, they don't. And but the thing I've learned through gardening and stuff is I have to source my seeds from good places as well, because the genetic, just the way they've changed things over amounts of time has completely changed the flavor of stuff. So moving towards more heirloom seeds, things that have actual flavor because they haven't been screwed with a lot by other people, you know?
Right. Well, what I talk about in Deep Nutrition is really, really pertinent to this, because your tomatoes look different than real tomatoes. The genetics of your tomatoes are different than real tomatoes. That's what's happened to us. We look different than we used to. 100 years ago. Look at a movie, any movie that was filmed in the 70s, and you'll see people walking around on any city street. They look like athletes. I mean, they're lanky, right? They look fit. And now any city street, and we're all overweight.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. I know I took my child to the local amusement park. We have a really big one that's close to us. I took her there for the day, and the amount of morbid obesity was blowing my mind. I almost couldn't even look at it. It was stressing me out, because that's how I think, right? And I was like, man, if these people only knew, but they're sitting on the benches and they're consuming these giant funnel cakes fried in who knows what. And then ice cream, and then their kids are obese. That's the worst part. Kids did not used to be obese like they are now, and they're running around, and everybody is so afraid to hurt their feelings that they don't want to teach them stuff, and they don't want to know. They put the blinders on and they ignore it, and they don't care. They just want to eat that funnel cake. Who cares if my child has type 2 diabetes when they're 12? They just don't want to know. And the society we're living in has gotten extremely scary. And like you said, it's no wonder that we are struggling from this small virus that's turned large, because everybody is so metabolically unhealthy. Their body can't fight anything.
One of the scariest things about children who are overweight is, what does that do to their brain? Aside from I have a whole chapter in Deep Nutrition on how seed oils destroy your brain. But let's say that wasn't even happening. Just being overweight as a child, you have tiny little airways here. And if you're significantly overweight, when you're laying down, those little airways collapse. And when the child is trying to inhale, they essentially don't get air. They're like suffocating, right? And that's called sleep apnea. That's a condition that is common in overweight adults, but it's almost 100% in overweight children. And so few overweight children are getting tested for it, because they don't snore loudly. And we just don't think about it. It doesn't occur to the doctor to bring it up. And it's what sleep apnea does is deprive you of oxygen, right? So that's not good when your brain is developing. And so they've done studies that show that children who are overweight, almost all of them have sleep apnea. And every child with sleep apnea has a significantly lower IQ, on average 15 points. That's big, because 15 points is a standard deviation. If you go from an IQ of 100 to an IQ of 85, that takes you from being, say, an A student to a B student on a curve, when you grade it on a curve. That means you're never going to be able to be, it's a standard deviation takes you from one grade to another. It takes you, two standard deviations take you out of the normal range, right? So if your IQ is two standard deviations down, that's considered mentally not, you're going to have problems. And if it's above two standard deviations, then that's considered genius. I mean, so one standard deviation is a big move, and those 15 points are huge, and that's average. So some children have more deficits. Of course, some escape that miraculously and don't have any deficits. But I want to talk about the two types of tomatoes, right? Because, it looks different, it tastes different, it has different nutrition and it's genetically different. We are very analogous to that tomato. So we look different and we often forget to go past the weight, right? Just the volume. We are bigger. But what else has changed? And this is one of the things that I found really disturbing when I was doing the research for my first book, Deep Nutrition. What else has changed is our very skeletal structure, the shapes of our bones and the shapes of our face. So you can see my face here. The reason I need glasses is it's not a genetic thing. It's because my grandparents, all four of them, perfect vision. And the reason I had to have a bunch of teeth pulled, same deal. None of my grandparents did that. It's because of nutrition. And I didn't get good nutrition at some point in my development, whether it's epigenetically before I was even conceived or during pregnancy or early in life. So I didn't get the proper development of so many things about my face. Like, so my eyes are not the right shape. So I need to wear glasses. And that's reflected, that lack of adequate nutrition is reflected in the fact that my bones here are like, they're asymmetrical. Like one eye is bigger than another. And my jaw, my lower jaw is a lot smaller than my upper jaw. So my whole face is kind of narrow and it's kind of like asymmetrical also. And then that's just the beginning with where I'm really messed up. You can't even see, but you can see it on an x-ray. It's my low back and my hips. And I have my whole life suffered with, well, not my whole life, but starting from like age 12, I started having hip pain. Even though I was an athlete, I could run. But that ended my running career, you know, by the time I was 18, even though I was really competitive, I got invited to the Olympic trials in 1980. But my career was basically over just a few years after that because of my nutritional deficits that stem not just from my lifetime, but even from my parents. And so that's where it gets kind of really creepy. I mean, it's fascinating and it's important to understand but it just kind of shows people the power of making that nutritional choice. And we are basically diverging into weird, different form of a human species where we have people who by luck or by design, their parents fed them well, and they're so much healthier than the people who had the bad luck. And their lives are just like, the experience of being human is now more diverse than ever before. Cause we have people who are like super athletes, they're in the NBA, they're super tall, they can do anything they want with their bodies, they're Olympians. That's genetically, you know, good momentum. They got fed well when they grew up, they had plenty of protein, they got tall. And then we have people that are never going to be like even as tall as their parents, because unfortunately they didn't get anywhere near as much protein during their gestation. And then they were fed on like formula, infant formula. I mean, they just don't stand a chance. And this isn't to judge people. This is to say, this has to stop. And if we can't even talk about it and understand it, we can't stop it. It's going to get worse. It's going to get to the point where children can't live without medications. And we're getting pretty close. We're getting like massive numbers of asthmatic children, massive numbers of diabetic children. And part of this, even like that kind of makes it like a vicious cycle, children who can't eat food, right? I mean, how many kids do you know now that have allergies to a long list of foods? And there's like three things they can eat. So they're like trapped, right? Now they're trapped. How can they ever escape? That's happening for a reason. That's what I'm saying. It's not a mystery. And it's not just stuff that we can't do anything about, like glyphosate and GMOs and all that kind of stuff. Is we can't take those out of the world, but we can take seed oils out of the world, and we can do our best to learn what real human nutrition is and get it into our bodies.
Absolutely. And I love that you actually use that analogy. One place where I've noticed I see it a lot is when I go to pick my kids up from school, the population has gotten smaller, and you did just say that. I've noticed that the maturity has also changed too, in different ways, right? So people are smaller and they're less developed physically, but hormonally they're more developed. I mean, to me, what I used to see in high school was somebody that looked like an adult. Sometimes maybe you would even have a hard time telling if they were an adult or not. Like coming from a, like, say you want to go buy booze or cigarettes, right. aspect. And now kids that are in high school, a lot of them look like they're still preteens or middle school. They're very small and underdeveloped, yet they're hormonally, they're overdeveloped. So there's a big problem with balance there, especially.
It's crazy. Yes. I mean, there are stories of like 6-year-olds that are starting to go through puberty. And what's happening there is something that happens on islands and, you know, to animals that are trapped on islands and don't get enough of the food, that basically the species shrinks. Or if there's an enormous amount of food, the opposite happens. So like we have these giant turtles, but then there's pygmies, humans that were discovered, like bones of humans that were about 3 feet tall from an island somewhere in the South Pacific around 18,000 years ago. And they thought that they were a different species. They didn't think they were Homo sapiens, but then they realized, no, they were. It's just that they were restricted in their protein for so long that the whole race became dwarfed. And that's just you know, the way nature works. That's how epigenetics works. Your genes are so intelligent that they learn what, you know, they have a strategy. Gee, we're not getting a lot of nutrition, not a lot of protein, not a lot coming in here. I don't think we can make these people as big as we did last time around. So let's kind of dial everything back a little bit. And you do that generation after generation and you get, you know, 3 feet tall humans. But we're starting that now. It's been 3-4 generations where the average woman doesn't get anywhere near adequate nutrition, not to mention the seed oils and all the things that that does to cause metabolic problems and birth defects. So it's just a complete onslaught onto the experience of being human. And having a child without arming yourself first, what are we eating? What were you eating? What are you eating, mom? What is it? And what's it deficient in? And what does it have way too much of, like these seed oils? And to that is just like stepping up to a game of disease roulette, right? Or, you know, and just sticking a gun to your head and choosing something terrible for your child's outcome without arming yourself with the proper information and defending your health with the proper diet. You have to defend your health against the forces out here that really don't care. And OPS, kind of maybe they do care because they like it when you're sick, right? The hospital systems, do they make money when you're healthy? No. Right? I mean, just like all the things that the economy is running off of have to do with sickness. It's the health industry, the hospital industry, the insurance industry, health insurance industry. They make money when people are sick because their parent companies are pharmaceutical companies. So because like it might be the insurance systems, you might think, well, they're the one people that don't want, the one industry that doesn't want people to be sick because they're the ones paying for it. Well, actually, the parent company of United Healthcare is Optima Rx.
That's crazy. It's all, yeah. They all hold hands with each other. Absolutely.
Right. So the hospital is just like a way of drawing customers in for the parent company to make sure that they're going to be on medications for life.
Yeah. And I see that in so many other places as well. I know I talked to Dr. Ben Bickman last week, and he basically had a lot of similar things to say on and off camera when we were just chatting. And it's kind of a crazy thing. And he's like, the scientists are doing the research and they're putting actual good information out there, but sometimes the healthcare profession is not taking it in.
Right, they are. There's a minority of scientists who are doing really great work, and the healthcare profession does not get doesn't get that information because it's like a screened. The journals that we read, most of them come out, but you know, a lot of them on heart health come out are published by the American Heart Association. And the American Diabetes Association is the same story. They have a lot of publications. These are the things that are driving the medical thought process and the medical conversation, and they themselves have conflicts of interest. There was a lot of publicity not too long ago about the influence of pharmaceutical companies in doctors' education, but that influence where drug company representatives would come in and wine and dine the doctors and pay for lunch and tell us, okay, we use this high blood pressure drug or this cholesterol medication instead of that other one. That is like such a small piece of the puzzle. The bigger problem is that we're going to put patients on any cholesterol drug or any high pressure medication because we don't know how else to prevent heart disease and strokes. Oh, and PS, that's not really, they don't work very well. They don't really work hardly at all. And they have tons and tons of side effects. And so like it all ties back to this first lie though from the American Heart Association about eating more seed oils, because you take seed oils out of your diet. If you right now don't know what you're eating, start looking 80% seed oils, cut that down to zero. And all of a sudden you're going to have more energy. You're going to have less cravings for sugar. You're going to lose weight. And if you have hypertension or diabetes, those things are going to go away. And as far as your arteries are concerned, the cholesterol number doesn't tell you what you need to know about your arterial health, but the amount of seed oils that you're consuming determines something called oxidized LDL, whether or not your LDL is oxidized. The LDL is the so-called bad cholesterol. It's not bad unless it's oxidized, but the seed oils oxidize it. So that's how the seed oils actually cause heart attacks. So I mean, the irony is just like insane. They're piled on top of each other here. We've got the American Heart Association saying, don't eat saturated fat, eat these seed oils, which cause oxidized cholesterol, which is actually the cause of heart attacks. And the doctors have all these other weird alternative explanations, but it's really just as simple as that, what I just said.
Yeah, and so many other processes, right? So how do polyunsaturated fats affect people's ability to burn their own fat?
So it's fascinating because it all starts with the mitochondria, these little powerhouses of our cells. So every single cell in our body is like, it's so complicated and intricate. It's amazing. And they have their own little power factories. It's kind of like a city. The power factories in your cell are called mitochondria. So mitochondria need certain fuels. They don't do well with just any fuel. And they do really terribly with polyunsaturated fatty acids, it turns out. But when our diets are so high in these things, they build up, the seed oils build up in our body fats. And specifically the type of oil, the type of fat I'm talking about, it's a fatty acid. It's called polyunsaturated fatty acid as opposed to saturated fatty acid or mono, like which olive oil is famous for that. So the polyunsaturated fatty acids, they build up in our body fat. You know, the more that we've been eating, the higher their percentage is in our body fat. Once it gets to a certain threshold, because they're unstable, we get inflammatory body fat. And because they're unstable, when the body fat releases them into the bloodstream as to be the fuel, the mitochondria can't actually produce energy when they're trying to burn these things. And so the cell, that little city says, the mayor says, I'm not getting enough fuel here when we're burning body fat, right? That's determined by your hormones, whether or not you're burning body fat or the energy that was from your last meal that is in your bloodstream. Well, what's always in your bloodstream is a little bit of sugar. So the cells start to get more and more efficient at slurping that little bit of sugar out of your bloodstream, because at least when they're burning sugar, it doesn't shut the mitochondria down. These polyunsaturated fatty acids, they just shut the mitochondria down. There's one study that was done in Italy that was like the most important study done ever on the planet, that they tested the different fuels, fat fuels for mitochondria. Saturated fat does fine. Monounsaturated fat does even a little bit better. Polyunsaturated fat shuts the thing down. They stop producing the energy in about 20 minutes. And depending on like the kind of polyunsaturated fats, omega-3 fatty acids are even worse than omega-6. Like we hear about omega-3 in fish oil, you got to supplement. Well, as far as a fuel for your cells, it's worse than omega-6. So anyway, so you've got these cells that are now, because they are desperate for energy, they're trying to suck as much sugar out of the bloodstream as possible. What does that happen? What does that do to your overall blood sugar level? It's going to go down. Right. And your brain needs either sugar or ketones. And so unless you're producing ketones, and very few people are these days because we eat so all the time, your brain is going to panic about that blood sugar level going down, and it's going to make you hungry. Exactly.
Absolutely.
So this is why we overeat. We are being forced to overeat by all these seed oils.
Basically. So Dr. Kate, that kind of made my brain have a thought here. And that was, when people are trying to go ketogenic and they're trying to lose weight that way, a lot of them, I know there's many contributors to what people call the keto flu. But my wonder is because of the quality of fat they have to burn is so poor, is that contributing to the overall lack of energy that they're explaining they have, and the general feeling of malaise and not doing well? Because so many people give up on a ketogenic diet before they ever even really give it a try, because they end up so sick from it.
Yes, it is exactly why. And not everyone's healthy enough to do it. I mean, it's a great diet, but guess what? It's not everyone's ready to do it. You know what else is really good for you? You know, running 3 or 4 miles a couple days a week. That's really good for you. Not everyone's in a place where they could do that. Some people, mm-hmm. you know, they're too heavy, or their joints are too, unhealthy. Not everyone can do something that's good for them, right? You have to get yourself to that state where you are healthy enough to do that keto diet. And that's like almost the whole reason I wrote the Fat Burn Fix, because I was finding patient after patient where they were just saying, I don't feel good. I did the keto diet. I got past the keto flu, but then I just started feeling worse. And it's because their body fat is still loaded with these polyunsaturated fatty acids, and they can't go full on burning body fat. They need sugar sometimes. And so that's what I have. I have two phases in the Fat Burn Fix plan, where I help people to focus on losing weight. The first phase is all about getting your body to the point where you can know how much carb to cut out, where you're cutting enough out, but not too much, right? Because carbs can have a lot of nutrition. And so I encourage people to have just the kind of carbs that are the most nutritious, or that, like, if you really need like a little bit of fruit, to have something else really, really healthy, just a little bit. Like, I don't tell people you need 100%, and you don't even need to do a keto diet to follow what I recommend. You'll get there eventually without it, right? But the whole point of the keto diet is, really, it's not so much about your ketone level. It's really about burning your body fat. That's really, in my opinion, that's the real benefit. It's a diet that helps your hormones release, get into the state where your body fat is now being released for fuel. But if you are hormonally damaged, that's not going to happen. And so those are the folks, I teach people how to like determine whether or not they're ready for that keto diet, and how to get there if they want to do it, or what else you can do instead that's going to get you the same benefits.
Absolutely. I love that. So what would be the first step that people need to take? Obviously removing seed oils from their diet is a big one, but what are some other steps they can take, and how long can they expect for it to take for this to become effective? Because many people I find are giving up on things months in, when you have spent years and years putting the damage on your body, and now you want this instant fix. And unfortunately, it doesn't happen that way. I know, just a little side note here, when I didn't know I was actually sick, and I switched the GAPS diet for other reasons back in the, like, a long time ago. And that's when I found my health, right? And I remember it saying specifically that you need to stay on that diet for at least 12 to 16 months minimum, strictly, in order to heal your gut. And I was like, I'm doing this. We're doing this. Within weeks, we saw results. And there were so many temptations along this journey, right? Where we wanted to eat at a barbecue or do something with our friends, but we straight up just said, no, we're not doing that right now. We stuck with the diet a solid 16 months, and it saved my life and my health and changed everything about my lifestyle and my thinking. And so things are not going to happen overnight. And I want my listeners to know that right now. But how long would you say would be a number for them to start to implement this strictly, and how long before they start to see some kind of result?
So other than avoiding the seed oils, to answer your question, so getting the right kind of fats in, and especially at breakfast, because if you do that on that day one there, you're going to notice that you have more energy, less brain fog by lunch. And then usually what happens is when people get in a groove, like say you can just like buy all the things that have the healthy fats, then what I call the slow digesting carbohydrates, and get plenty of protein in. Probably 2 weeks, you're going to feel just overall, you're going to wake up and you're going to have less stiffness in your body. You're going to notice less inflammation, less bloating. If you have swelling in your legs, that's going to be diminished. You're going to have much better ability to concentrate all day. You're going to have a lot less fatigue in that late afternoon slump when a lot of people come home from work and they're like so exhausted, they can't even think about dinner. That's going to improve. It starts to improve. And usually by 6 months, people say, I cannot believe how much better I feel. Like people say things like, I feel better in my 50s than I did in my 20s. I mean, by 6 months, you start getting to that point. And then it still keeps getting better, like for another year or two. It depends how long it takes to get the seed oils out of your body. Like, and that's all about like how aggressive you are about avoiding them and eating more healthy fats. And because you're cleansing your body fat of these toxins that have been with you for years, and you're finally getting them out and enabling your metabolism to function. But I want to just ask or ask, when you do the GAPS diet, that's free of vegetable oils, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. There's nothing processed in it at all. It's 100%. It is what it is. Like ingredient reads, ingredients, coconut oil, or, you know, like it's straight up, that can be the ingredient. You have to know what it is. Otherwise, basically, you're not eating it, and that you're not going to go anywhere and eat out anything that is available on the GAPS diet. I mean, it's just not happening.
Right. So like, that's one of the many benefits of the GAPS diet. And there's a lot of different diets out there that get people off seed oils. And I believe that's the main reason that they help. Like a lot of folks say, well, I went, you know, whole food vegan, and that helped me a lot. Well, so if you're vegan, it's very difficult to get like three of the four pillars that I talk about. But you know, especially protein, it's hard to get protein. You can't get bone broth. You don't get organ meats. You can, you know, if you're vegan, there's a ways to do it. It's just a lot harder. But whole food vegans don't do seed oils either, right? And so maybe it's getting those seed oils out that's made you feel good. And maybe you can go back to eating real foods if you want to, more diversity of them if you want to. And the same with folks who go gluten-free, like especially before there was all these gluten-free processed foods, which there are now, people would say, oh, I went gluten-free and I feel great. Well, okay, yeah, nobody avoids gluten, right? You can't just avoid gluten. It's a component of wheat, and wheat is a component of like meals, mm-hmm. like junk food meals, right? You're not eating pizza. You're not having any pasta, which is usually loaded with, you know, seed oil instead of marinara sauce made with olive oil, right? So you are staying away from seed oils. And again, I bring this up not to say that there's not value to those diets, but to say that for a lot of folks who are doing them because it was their introduction or a friend did it and it really helped them, you may not need to be that restrictive. And I think that's an important message for everyone, because it's hard enough to eat real food and just find it. But if you're restricting out anything with any gluten, or, you know, you can't even have a sprout of grain bread. If you are restricting out, you know, say you went on a FODMAPs diet, right? You're restricting out onions and garlic. Well, maybe if you had also cut out seed oils as part of that whole experiment to see if they would, it would help you, stay off the seed oils, but maybe start adding some of the other things that you've been missing back. And I find that most people can do, add in a lot more than they thought.
I love that. So what are some of the main fats that you recommend people consume? I know I tell a lot of people animal fats are great if they're grass-fed and well taken care of, because there's another side of that coin, right? Like a lot of the meats that you're buying at the grocery store are grain-fed, and the fat is completely different than... It's like consuming your own toxic fat and trying to use it for energy, I guess is one way to put it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great way to put it. So yeah, you have to add fat because most of the meats are relatively fat-free. I mean, pork, you can still get bacon, sausage, but you know, chicken and a lot of the cuts of the filet, and so they're totally fat-free. So butter, and I usually do stress, it's super important to get, grass-fed if that's available to you. And the high fat, all the high fat dairy, so like cheese and sour cream and cream cheese and, you know, lovely things like brie cheese, and the half and half in your coffee, so simple. And then avocados, or if you're a vegetarian, the higher fat fruits and nuts like coconut and macadamia nuts and, you know, peanut butter, almonds, just like any of the higher fat, it's basically nuts and seeds. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's one other thing that I always recommend. Well, the higher fat meats. So if you do get bacon, save the grease and use that to fry your eggs, right? Eggs are another one, obviously. But save that bacon grease, and you can even like do it as like a warm dressing over spinach salad. It's really delicious.
I've gotten hooked on duck fat. I've been doing that a lot. Between that and grass-fed butter, I'm an addict, I'm pretty sure. You can fry things up pretty nice in duck fat, and it tastes amazing.
Wow. Yeah, that sounds great. We tried that for a few things, but we don't get it very often.
It's super expensive. That's the downside to the duck fat. But who doesn't love butter? I'm a huge fan of butter myself. So I do okay with that too. I mean, I put a healthy serving before I put my eggs in the pan. That's for sure. But yeah, so Dr. Kate, is there anything else that we want to get out there to listeners? One thing I did want to bring up now that I'm going off track here is flax oil. So many people think that that's a recipe for health. And boy, I just saw a recipe posted on Instagram the other day out of a health food cookbook. And the first thing it had was flax oil in it. Can you kind of tell us a little bit about that?
Well, flax oil is not something that's great to cook with because heat, the whole reason we supplement, some people supplement with this because of the omega-3, but omega-3 is so heat sensitive. It's unstable. That's the problem with all the PUFAs, is that they're unstable and heat makes them even more unstable. So I wouldn't cook with it if you're doing that. Now, if you're not able to get omega-3s any other way, like if you say you don't do grass-fed dairy and you just don't like the nuts that have omega-3, like walnuts, and you don't do fish, then it's a decent supplement, but you're going to need to not heat that thing. It's not going to be good for you after you heat it. Just polymerizes.
Got it. So anything else we need to get out there to my listeners? How about how to get in contact with you if they want to look more into your work? Also maybe your books?
Yeah, great. So my website is drkate.com, and that's Dr. Kate with a C, D-R-C-A-T-E, and no dot after the doctor. And that has all the information on my books, which are just a really great resource, I think, because I help I want to help people kind of rethink things so that they don't feel like there's conflicting information, so that they feel grounded. And that was my whole point in writing them. There's a lot of science in them. So if you like science, if you enjoy reading, if you like history, if you like nature, you're going to love the books. But I also have a lot of information for free on my website, the good fats and bad, the shopping list, and smart supplementation supplements that I recommend. And I'm involved with a company that has a collagen supplement, because so many people want the benefits of collagen, but they just don't have the time to drink bone broth or make it. So I decided that I really wanted to help this company make the right kind of bone broth. So I do that too. It's called CB Supplements, and that's all available. Information is all available on my website.
Awesome. Well, I will put all of that in the show notes so that all my listeners can just go click on it and go right straight to it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
Yes, I certainly appreciate your time and talking with me today. It's been a pleasure.
Likewise. I like your whole getup there. It's so like hip.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I work on that. I mean, you know, who I'm trying to keep things consistent, be a good, you know, influencer.
Very good.
All right. You have an awesome day.
Thanks. You too. Thanks for.
Well, friends, that wraps up my episode with Dr. Kate. I'm so thankful that she decided to join me today to share all of her information and knowledge that she has, especially because she is such a busy lady. So thank you, Dr. Kate, for that. As I said in the beginning of the podcast, you can find her at drkate.com. And if you want to look for that shopping list, I have all of those links in my show notes. So go ahead and go on over there. And you can give me a follow on Instagram at Connie Begani. I would love to hear from you guys. Any ideas, feedback, things you want to know about the podcast, or questions you might have that have arisen after the podcast, I'm happy to try to answer them for you. And I just love to communicate with all of you guys. So feel free to reach out anytime, DM me on Instagram, or visit my website, ConnieNightingale.com. And you guys, if you liked this episode and you found value in it, please head on over, leave me a review. I would appreciate that ever so much. It helps me out immensely. And also, if you do that right now and you take a screenshot of it and put it in your Instagram stories, you can win big. I have a big package that I am giving away that has L. Russ's book in it. It has stuff from Wild Foods, all sorts of amazing things. So I'm looking forward to giving that away. Just go ahead, leave me a written review, screenshot it in your Instagram stories, and I will get you put on the list. I will be giving that away for the mid-January episode, and I am so excited. All right, guys, thank you so much. Until next time.